Pickaxe.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 2,99 € bringst du deine Mittagspause mit Sushi ins Rollen. Lecker. Und für 1,99 € gönnst du dir danach noch eine kleine Eiszeit. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier die Snacktime Sushi Box ab 205 Gramm für nur 2,99 € oder Mucki Sandwich Eis je 8 Stück für nur 1,99 €. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hello and welcome to the Triforce podcast. This week we're broadcasting from our coronavirus-proof bunker in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, wow. We're self-isolating.
We got to stay safe. It's spreading.
You know, I realized when they were talking about self-isolating, I just do that anyway. Yeah. Like, that's just how I live.
Video games have rendered me self-isolated.
People have been saying, like, you know, draw the curtains, you know, tell the Ocado guy to leave the shopping on the doorstep and then just, you know, watch that box set you've been putting off for a while, you know.
Oh, man.
Like hey, that's my life anyway, right? Like, what's...
Okay, check this segue, check this transition. The box set that I've been putting off, okay? Right? I started watching it and, man, I'm loving it. I started watching The Toys That Made Us. The docuseries on Netflix.
Really? I didn't watch it.
It's really, really good. I put off watching because I just thought, fuck, you know, the first season was great. They did the Star Wars toys by Kenner, you know, like the original ones.
Mm.
The story's really interesting. They did He-Man, which was really interesting. And they did
so many of those.
G.I. Joe, you know, like the fully articulated three-quarter.
Well.
Yeah, I had tons of them too. Really interesting. And Barbie as well, which is super
interesting. Well,
they
are really legendary.
So there's four episodes in the first season. The focus is more on sort of like North American culture, though, in the 80s, from what I've noticed. You know what I mean?
Do they interview anyone who's like, this is my mint collection.
Yes, tons of people.
Caravan Barbie, she's still in the packaging. It's like she's got a whole house full of...
Yeah. And they talk about like... It's really interesting to see which like flavors of Barbie did really well. Like Malibu Barbie, when it was introduced, became like the biggest seller of all time.
I mean, Malibu Stacy was referenced in The Simpsons, right?
They still make Malibu Barbies now because it's that sort of valley girl, you know, sun-kissed skin with, you know, blonde hair and stuff. And it's like almost became like a template for... I don't know, like American women.
Right,
or something.
So here's a question about that, right? Malibu Barbie comes out in the 80s, and then in the 90s and the 2000s, you have a lot of celebrities.
I think it came out in like the 60s or the 70s.
Really, Malibu Barbie, like the big seller? Because Barbie in the 80s was fucking huge.
Barbie in the 80s was big and then slumped, and then Barbie in the 90s was big and then slumped. It's been around for a long time, so it's not
1971. It feels like it's
been consistently really popular, but there's been times where it hasn't been, and it's had to sort of move with the times as well, like social change and stuff like that too. I don't know. It's just weird. It's kind of weird to think that this is a toy that came out in the 50s and has been around like all this time.
How much say do kids have in buying this stuff and making? Are the kids the ones picking it off the shelves, or are the parents the ones picking it for them?
I think early on back in the days, it was like you had to convince mothers before children about toys, because you know, like a mother would take a, you know, like I think kids get into a toy store and they're like, I want that one or whatever. But like when Barbie first came out, Barbie had boobs. And at the time it was just like, well, this fucking doll has boobs. Like everybody thought it was
she
like,
she had a banging bod to be fair to Barbie. She really,
I mean, it's changed a lot over the years and stuff.
Didn't they
too
figure out that she was like some really alien size?
She
like,
used to
she
be
looked,
thicker.
She looked like Slender Man.
The Barbie now is skinny as fuck, but Barbie used to be
The guy who originally designed her was a... He used to design missiles for the U.S. military.
He's got a couple of missiles on this one, lads. Yeah. A couple of fucking torpedoes.
And then Mattel scoop him up because he was like an industrial engineer or whatever. And he starts drawing up. He invented, you know, like the fucking knee snapping thing that, you know, when you bend Barbie's legs and you hear that snapping thing. Like he patented and invented that.
Genius.
And like all the ways that she moves and her shape and everything. And but it turned out like later in life that he was like a fucking total sex addict, and like he just like did a lot of cocaine and was like a party boy and stuff. And like it just seemed weird that, like, I wonder what came first. Like, was he always like that, or was it just from years of designing like this like perfect woman?
Also, more importantly, did he ever get any poontang because he designed Barbie? Like, was that a child?
Yeah. Well, I think he was fairly wealthy. Like at the time, they couldn't afford to pay him the salary that he was getting paid designing missiles. So they brought him in on a lower salary, but they gave him like a 1.5% royalties of anything that he designed for Barbie, which made him like a millionaire overnight, basically. It was like this insane deal for him.
You know what? It's so funny. When you think back to these businesses, all of these toys were mainly designed, made, overseen, managed by blokes.
Yeah, well, especially back in like the 50s, the 60s. Like,
but there would
sure.
absolutely have been women involved. But we're talking about the 50s and 60s. It was like very, you know, very, very much a more sexist era. And I just imagine the Mad Men guys, but instead of doing advertising, I would like to see a version of Mad Men where they're arguing about Barbie dolls.
Man.
And Don Draper gets up and gives some speech about knees and snapping and how... You want a shorter skirt? Well, let me tell you something. The American people aren't ready for a shorter skirt. You know, that's real.
I imagine that it was somewhat like that. But they had this period where at Mattel, the founder of Mattel was a woman and her husband, but she was like the big cheese,
right?
And she got caught up in a big scandal where she was like cooking the books. Because things weren't like going super well at Mattel at after a certain point. This is despite
did
having Barbie.
Did she use the Barbie cooking set to cook the books? That's my question.
I'm sure she did, yeah. But anyway, she was ousted. She was fined. She was ousted from the company. She had to do community service and stuff. And then there was a period where it was just a bunch of you know, old crusty corporate guys that took over Mattel. So they were
take over from here, sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah. So they were running Barbie, and one of the Barbie lines that came out at that time.
Oh my god,
did
they do like prison Barbie and like community service Barbie? So she's got a big bag.
No.
Got the orange jumpsuit, picking up
but
rubbish.
It was always a hard sell to men, because when men saw a Barbie doll and they saw her breasts, they immediately just thought about sex.
They humped it.
Right? But like when a woman saw a Barbie doll or like a child saw a Barbie doll, like they didn't think on those terms, obviously, sort of thing. So these guys all take over the Barbie franchise, and they're responsible for, you know, creating these new lines and keeping the company afloat or whatever. And one of the Barbies that came out around this time was you could turn her arm all the way around, and in doing so, it would like inflate or deflate her tits. So you could like she could become like prepubescent Barbie and
oh
then
my God.
Woman Barbie, like just by like twirling her arm around. And like it's funny, the lady describing it's like all these men execs thought that it was just this incredible thing, a feat of engineering that you could make her tits bigger.
My twisted arm, god damn it, Johnson, you cracked.
Yeah, and it just totally flopped. Like all these mums like going to the store and seeing this and being mortified, nobody bought it for their kids and stuff.
How do you even advertise that?
Some
on
of the
box?
Stories are super fucking funny. So anyway, the TLDR is it's a really cool series. It's actually really well done. It's very funny. It's super interesting. And especially if you grew up in the 80s, which it seems to focus on very heavily, around the time when the G.I. Joe sort of revamp came along, He-Man, the Star Wars toys and stuff.
That was my childhood with those
course.
Toys.
Same. So it was just a massive blast of nostalgia for me.
When I
really
came
good.
To the UK, having grown up with American toys and the sheer volume of them on offer, and they were all very, very glitzy and kind of, they seemed like amazing. I mean, Transformers, obviously a lot of these toys were not made in America, but a lot of them being launched in America, the cartoon and all the rest of it, the, you know, G.I. Joe and Transformers and He-Man, it all felt very American-centric. And growing up there, you felt like this is incredible. And I came to the UK and it was a bit like, because obviously the UK 70s and partly into the 80s was still recovering from sort of the war, and it had a far more socialist feel. So it felt a bit like going from the future to some dank communist country where the toys were like a cheap knockoff of the West, even though Britain is in the West. It felt like their toys
were kind
of shit.
We've got working man's Barbara.
Exactly.
She knows how to cook a meal for her husband when he comes home after a long day in the coal mine.
It just felt a bit crappy. Like the Barbie dolls, the Cindy, and there was another one. Yeah. They just looked a bit chubbier and kind of not as well. They didn't have a tan. Their clothes were like homemade. just so funny.
This is another thing, like, because my wife has been sort of half watching it in the background while I'm watching it, and she's interested enough, but because it is so North American focused, like even with Barbie, she had a couple of Barbies, but she had Cindy's, right? That was the big thing in the UK. So some of it she was like, oh yeah, whatever, but like it didn't really apply. Same with G.I. Joe's. Like, G.I. Joe's just didn't make it over here. It was, you know, it was like the Barbie-sized action men that were still
right,
popular.
Right, but the
at
range
the time.
Of, I mean, when I came over here, action men was not a thing you got in the States, like, at all. Like, toys, back then, I was thinking about this, I think we talked about it the other week, I can't remember, about that I was watching the original Day of the Jackal, when the characters in England, all the cars are English. When he's in France, they're all French. When he's in Italy, they're all Italian. And it was the same with toys, in that when I came over here and I went to a toy store, there seemed to be a much smaller range of toys that I was used to seeing in huge volumes. And you just could not get toys over here that were available in the States. So I'd go to the States on holiday and I'd go to the Star Wars aisle and it would be teeming with stuff that we had just never seen in the UK, like the Ewok Village and stuff like that. But I think the Ewok Village was a pretty universal one, but there were other sets and characters and ships that you just could not get. Like, you could get Slave One, Boba Fett ship, never saw it in the UK. If someone got it in the UK, fair play to you. But in the States, I saw way more range. It's the same with Barbies. And in a way, it still is. Like, the ranges of toys that they offer, the size of the stores is so much bigger. So when I came to the UK, everything seemed much smaller and pokier. And the toy stores seemed to have a much smaller range. So their Star Wars range was like a few of the main characters, a couple of the bigger things.
Yeah.
But I never saw like a Millennium Falcon on the shelves or an X-Wing, but I used to see them all the time in the States.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I guess nowadays, you won't get that so much nowadays because a lot of the shows that are watched in the West, for example, you know, people are watching them on like Netflix or whatever.
Also, you can get it all on Amazon or whatever. Like, it's all available.
But like my kids watch stuff on Netflix that is clearly American,
right,
but sometimes will be dubbed with like by somebody with a British accent. You know what I mean? Like, there's lots of Canadian shows that they
Paw
watch.
Paw Patrol.
Yeah, Paw Patrol is a perfect
I don't know
example.
Why they dub it into an English accent, because they didn't dub Peppa Pig when they took it over to the States. They kept the original voices, and they said a lot of little kids in America are growing up with Peppa Pig's British accent, which is quite funny.
But
it's like, it was weird. There were a lot of shows you didn't get over here, or that it wasn't as, like, it was every day in the States.
Yeah.
And I would get my Spider-Man comics and all my Marvel comics, really. And in them, there would be a big two-page spread of, like, your Saturday morning TV. And it had all the characters, and all of them were just basically selling toys. Every single one of them was about selling toys. That was that was the way they did it. I guess they still do that. I mean, there's a fuckload of Peppa Pig stuff out there.
Holy shit, is there ever, yeah. And like, my daughter's into My Little Pony now, which is
crap. Yeah, mine went through that phase as well.
It's just everything. Like, it's almost like they make a movie and like, frame for frame, you can find a new toy in there. You know what I mean? There's just like everything. And one new character is introduced, they can make like 12 variations of a toy for them and stuff. It's insane.
I mean, that started with Star Wars and followed through with Transformers and things like this.
Yeah, Star Wars was E-Man the big too, one like, for merchandise.
I think Star Wars was one of the first that did that sort of thing where it released basically the same toy over and over again, just in different variations. Like, they had like miniature versions, or they had like whatever, you know, they had like these different sets.
It just did so well, though. I think that the iconic thing I remember was that, remember George Lucas saying that to Spaceballs that he could, you know, you could go ahead and do whatever you want with Spaceballs, just you're never allowed to make any toys, you know, because that was like the money. That was where the money was.
I mean, there's no doubt they made more money.
It's funny he realized that, but they had the worst deal. Like, the story behind Star Wars and the toys, they ended up signing with Kenner. You remember Kenner, the toy company Kenner? This is just like a small ass toy company in Cincinnati that had no really big lines of toys or whatever. You know, they were just doing what they could to get by, sort of thing. And then they landed the rights to Star Wars, because when Star Wars was coming out and being filmed, everybody just thought it was going to be a huge flop. Even George Lucas thought it was going to be a huge flop. Like, if you ever read about the story of Star Wars. So no toy companies wanted to touch it. They were just not interested. And then Kenner comes along and says, yeah, we'll take it. But the deal that they made was like, it was crazy. It was like, for every sale, like, I think George Lucas got like 2.5 cents on a dollar. Fox got 2.5 cents on a dollar, and then the rest went to Kenner. So they just had this like insane deal, and they just made millions. Like, it was absolutely nuts.
Is this what contributed to that original kind of idea of the Christmas scarcity of a toy and that whole...
Yeah, well, so what they did, they didn't have the toys ready in time for Christmas when the movie came out, and nobody expected the movie to be as big as it was. And when Christmas came around, they had no physical toys to sell. But what they did was they sold this piece of paper that had a picture of all the figures. So you bought the piece of paper, it was like a poster with all the figures on it, and then you bought into this promise that the toys would ship to you within like 3 or 4 months of purchasing that at Christmas. So they still managed to get this crazy Christmas rush in of sales. And then once the toys were ready and they hit the shelves, they just like, they never even touched the shelves. They were just flying like out of the stores. Like,
it's like a Kickstarter.
They sold like over 2 billion Star Wars toys, like just for the original trilogy. Like, it was insane.
Did you know Kenner made some toys to tie in with the Aliens franchise?
Probably.
That's what I had.
If you look them up in your own time, listeners of this podcast.
Do you reckon they were thinking it's going to be as big as Star Wars?
Well, they made them in 1992, and Aliens came out in 1986, so God knows what they were thinking. But they've taken the characters, and they've tried to make them... Like, nowadays, if you think about the characters that come out, the Lord of the Rings movies, any fucking movie, I go into my local comic shop in Richmond, and they've always got toys in tie-ins for everything. So every movie that comes out, because it's grown-ups collecting them, really, for their little glass case of inceldom that they put all their things in. And these were way before that. 1992, this wasn't a thing back then. And they've taken them, and it's like, nowadays, they're made loving recreations of the characters. So there's like John Wick toys or whatever, and there'll be a perfect model. It'll look just like John Wick in the movie. But back then, if you look at this, they've been like, their imagination has run wild. So Ripley has like a gigantic cannon and like all this stuff hanging off her. Vasquez has a back-mounted missile launcher that sits on top of her head and has a giant rack of missiles. Like, they've literally turned them into cheap-ass superheroes as a vague tie-in to the Aliens franchise. That's so weird.
It happens a lot with toys, though. Like, if you watch this documentary, you'll see that a lot of the big... Like the final play for like a lot of these toys, because like there's definitely a shelf life for them as well. The G.I. Joe toys, I remember them dominating my childhood. They were only popular for like 4 or 5 years, and they were gone, completely slumped. And it was the same. It was like, at first it was like, you know, the real American hero.
Yeah,
they were fighting Cobra and stuff, and then it just got crazy. They were in space fighting octopuses and stuff, and like, and people just moved on to whatever was coming out next that was fresh.
The toys
and stuff
that informed the media, though, too. Like, they made more money than the media. So it was like, we need to make the media to sell these toys. Yeah. How can we make this? And as a result, it's like the hand, the dog scratching the hand. What is it?
The He-Man toys were the same. It was like the first year sales. They couldn't have imagined it. They were just like, what? They thought they would make maybe a million. They ended up making like 7 million in their first year. So they were pretty happy. But then like second year was like fucking some crazy, like 30 million. Third year was like 70 million. And then fourth year was like 200 million. And they were just like, holy shit, like we can do no wrong. We'll just keep pumping out He-Man toys. Fifth year, back to 7 million. Like it just completely fucking bottomed out.
I wonder if it's like... Like, if you think about the as you said, the shelf life for these toys, it's not just like what's hot. Because if you think about it, something doesn't stay hot for like 5 years.
Yeah.
It's more like kids are the right age.
Yeah, that's
it. The cartoons come out. This is the best thing ever. But when those kids grow up, you can't rerun the old cartoons because they're no longer cool. And also, when that kid's grown up too big for those toys, they give them to their younger sibling. You don't need to buy them a second time.
No, of course.
And but, then you need to get a new generation into it, but then everything's changed. There's new, cooler cartoons.
That's it. I mean, you like the next generation of kids isn't going to be interested in what the previous generation played with, right? Because there'll be something new. Like, I remember He-Man sort of like not necessarily dying out because I loved it. I used to watch the show and everything. But as I got older, I remember getting into G.I. Joes, and that was right. Just like, okay, I'm playing with G.I. Joes now. And then after G.I. Joes, I got more into like Constructs and Lego and stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that's a fairly natural path for a child and playing with toys sort of thing.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, of course, you're going to, you know, in the same way that we flip between movies and franchises and TV shows and games these days. Like, but then again, some things have stuck around for a long time. I mean, Pokemon cards, think about that. What's that?
Yeah, they keep coming back.
They keep coming out. Stuff. There's like a new series that just came out. My son's buying them. Like, we went to, there was like a local comic convention here last weekend, and we went and he bought a bunch of Pokemon cards. It was just like, what? Like,
interesting.
Like the latest series, or he doesn't even play Pokemon. He just collects
them.
Yeah,
no, same. My eldest just collects them.
Yeah.
She's got a book.
Yeah.
Like what we got like the book with the little slidey holes for all the cards.
Yes.
She organizes them according to this, that, and the other, but
she's
never played.
There's some really weird psychology there, isn't there?
And he likes trading them too. He trades them with his friends at school.
She fucking loves to trade
them. It's crazy.
Gotta catch them
all. It's funny. Like, I guess it teaches them a bit about like economy and money and stuff like that. Like, because at first he was just trading stuff because he thought his friends would want these things. I was like, don't give your good stuff away. Like, you know, trade your doubles and trade for stuff that you need. And he was like, oh yeah. Like, it just clicked. Like, it's funny. Like, because kids, they don't really know what they're doing, you know?
No.
You
gotta,
help
well,
them out and stuff.
My eldest is some kind of trading savant because she keeps her eye on the trends. She understands that. Oh, she came home the other
week.
She's
like a day trader with like screens.
She literally is. She came home at the start of this school year and she was like,
put a suit on.
I think some of the year threes, because they've moved up to the, so there are two playgrounds at the school. There's one for the year one and two kids. And then once you're in year three to year six, you're in the big playground. So the year three new intake, they see all the stuff that the year fives and sixes are playing with. And of course,
so she's hustling.
The year threes come into the playground. She sees them and she said to me, some of the year threes are getting into Pokemon. I think that's, you know, and she was basically thinking new market.
Do you want to invest, Dad?
New market, sorry, yeah. She's like, you should get in on the ground floor. This is going to be big. It's a bear market. Let's go. Or is it a bull market? I don't know, whichever it is. Bull market, I think. So she figures out that all the kids in year three just want the cute Pokemon, and they'll trade their good Pokemon for cute Pokemon. So she starts trading for cute Pokemons so she can double her winnings by going to the year threes and giving them the cutie pie Pokemons. So she says to me, one kid just wants Pikachus. Doesn't matter if they're really bad Pikachus, he wants them. I've got a Korean Pikachu. He's going to want that. So she takes that into school on the Friday when they're allowed to take him in. She's trading up like 10 GXs or whatever they are for like one lousy rare Pikachu. That's like worthless. She's like, it's garbage. The stats are garbage. I was like, what do you care about stats? You don't even play the game. But she knows that is then more valuable to another trader.
Yeah, yeah.
Who does play.
That's smart. You've raised an entrepreneur.
How much does she want?
She needs a million.
Put me down for two boxes.
For 2% of the company.
I'll take five cute Pikachus, please.
Yeah. But get this, she expanded her market further, right? She realized that there were a lot of boys that didn't have an interest in Pokemon cards, but they had some. They just acquired them somehow. Like,
there were a lot of boys that just wanted to talk to girls.
Right, well,
so
she found out that they were into Match Attacks, like the football cards. So she traded, and we bought. She was like, I need to buy some Match Attacks. I was like, oh, you getting into football? She goes, no, I still don't care about football, but the boys at school want the Match Attacks cards. And I don't care if I give them a Mario Balotelli or whatever, as long as I can get some Pokemon cards. And they'll do like 3 and 4 to 1 because they care more about the Match Attacks than they do about the Pokemon. So she realized that the value for those guys was in the Match Attacks. So she bought and she traded for some shit Match Attacks cards. Bingo, she's doubled up.
So all the boys are upgrading out of Pokemon. They're like, Pokemon's dead. We're 13 years old now. We don't want no Pokemon.
It's all about football cards now, baby.
Yeah.
Well, they were 10, to be fair. So yeah.
It's funny how these little factions form at school, though, because even my son, who's 8 and in year 3, there's like 4 or 5 guys at his school who are, I guess their dads are really into football, and as a result, they're really into football or whatever. But man, these kids have like all the jerseys and they trade cards and they play football at lunch and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, it's insane.
All right, so let me ask you guys, this is a moral quandary, if you like. This is a friend of mine. Their son isn't really good enough to play football for the school team.
Right.
But he loves football. He's very enthusiastic. He wants to play.
Right.
Now, the school team doesn't have a B team. They only have an A team. So you either make the cut or you don't get to play, and you don't even get to train with the team. Like, they just train the A team kids. They don't. If you didn't make the cut, that's it. You're out.
Oh, so, my God. I figured this story out. Are you talking about yourself in Dota 2 right now?
No, there's no A or B team. I'm fucking D team. Like,
maybe
best,
he could become a coach. You're like, or a referee.
I love the game, but no one wants to be on their team.
Is he good at being a goalkeeper, maybe?
Well, that's... Or is no, that a different... I mean, he loves football. Like, he lives for football.
That's a great suggestion.
But he just can't do it.
That might be the answer, people.
No, that's not the answer, because that's still playing football, lads. They don't just stick the worst player in goal. You have to be good at being a goalie to be in goal.
I know, but maybe he should try it out. Maybe he'll find that he's actually good at that. You know,
no.
It's a different set of skills.
I'm sure he has, but the point is that they've run the rule over this kid and decided he's not up to scratch. So... What do you say if that's your child who says, I really want to play football, I didn't make the cut, what can I do? What do you do?
Do you like Barbies?
All the other kids in your class, all the other boys in your class are playing football. You can't.
Do you like missiles? do you want to design some missiles? Look, you know, you football. You can be your own man. Just because sometimes you don't want to be, sometimes you don't want your hobby to become your passion, your job even. Sometimes you want your passion to stay as your passion. Your hobby can be like this thing that you're like, you love. You know, if you start playing football, maybe you'll hate it, you know? Stick to the sides.
I mean, he has played and he really wants to play.
He really wants to play.
How about mascot? Can he wear the costume?
I don't know why I fucking asked you, of all
football
people,
manager.
Lewis Brindley.
Why does he be manager?
Tell your friend, you know, to watch. There's a whole bunch of really good YouTube documentaries on famous basketballers like Kobe Bryant and like Michael Jordan and stuff. And I'm sure this exists for all types of sportsmen or whatever. Not only do you have to play a lot and practice a lot, but there's like a lot of psychology in it too, right? Like there's some...
I
watched some really interesting videos recently about Kobe Bryant and like how he would like approach, you know, like matches against, you know, people he thought were like really tough competition for him, sort of thing.
Right.
Because like if they're paired up against each other on opposing teams or whatever, there's a chance that they can't score as many points as they normally would for their team, right? And then they could lose as a result. So
right.
He had to like study his enemies a lot to see what kind of stuff they would do, what sort of positioning they would use and stuff, so that he could you know, foil them them from scoring points and stuff. And he was like really good at it, but a couple of times when he wasn't so good at it and was frustrated with it, he went away and just like worked even harder to like study them and everything, and then would come back and get results and stuff.
Maybe it's the same with
this football kid. Maybe he's just got to go off and not only does he have to do the physical, but you got to do the mental as well.
You see, like, you know, like shorter footballers who are still like playing at the top flight, despite the fact that they are, you know, not as...
Well,
like,
look at Wayne Rooney. He's like the Danny DeVito of football, and he's
what
good.
Are you talking about? Wayne Rooney wasn't that short.
I don't watch much football.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty obvious. I mean, Lionel Messi would be a decent example. Xavi, these were small guys. Iniesta. Carlos Puyol was short for a defender.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Football. We get it. You know a lot of footballers.
Basketball, again, it's even harder, though, if you're a small guy to make it, I guess. And there will be a point at which, you know, I'm assuming this...
Well, you might not get the dunks, but you can still get the shots. You might be good at throwing three-pointers or whatever. Like, you know, everybody's got that. But I think you just got to keep working at it.
I think if he's 10, I don't think he should pack in his dreams of being a pro footballer right now.
No. Listen, this isn't about being a professional footballer. This is wanting to play football with your friends at school.
But not being good enough to do it.
Right. He hasn't made the cut at school.
Okay.
And they play like every day.
If he loves it, he has to keep trying, because some people naturally will just gravitate towards and be better at it to begin with.
You're saying he needs to double his work effort.
Yeah, some people will just take longer to get good. But with enough practice, he can get good. Like, he's not doomed to never be good at it.
Well, I mean, if he's actually got, like, a broken leg or something, can he actually physically can't do it? Then, I mean,
well, that's a little bit
different conversation.
I mean, there's been no sort of mention of that, so I'm assuming...
Oh, yeah, sorry, no, he has no arms or legs.
Right.
Right.
Well, what about being a header? You have to do that.
What about being a header? Let's move off football. Let's move off football because this is actually triggering me.
They should have that. Like Peter Crouch, he was a header,
he's
right?
He's got a jetpack and he heads the balls. That's it. Jesus.
Oh, I would watch the hell out of that. That would make football so much watchable.
Well, man, I think everyone would. It's like basically Rocket League.
Oh, man. That would be a fucking toy. That would be like a fucking amazing toy line.
It would.
If Kenner were making toys.
Never design a toy.
If Kenner were making toys about the 1990 football team, the Italian 90 England team, around that era, that's when Kenner were at their peak. You would have had Gazza with a jetpack. Gary Lineker would have had like giant feet
because
he's good at shooting. An action kick, like you pull his leg back and it kicks really hard and stuff. And they would have had accessories like
bazooka that fires
special
footballs.
Communication helmet, bazookas, and everything. Yeah, it would have been Bobby Robson would have been a gigantic robot suit.
A ballzooka. Yeah, so I was thinking earlier.
Peter Shilton is the shape of the goal. He's just the actual shape of the goal.
What would the equivalent? What would the fucking equivalent of alien toys be these days? Are we talking about like a human centipede action figure or like a Stephen King's It clown action figure? Do you know what I mean?
But there probably are those things, but they're
Texas
not aimed at
Chainsaw
kids.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
My thing is that these were clearly toys aimed at kids for a franchise of movies that are 18+.
The alien ones were, yeah, the alien ones definitely
I don't think toys are... Toys historically... weren't made against movies, and only few movies have pulled off successful toy ranges. And the reason is because movies are only in a movie theater for like a couple of months or whatever, and then they're gone, sort of thing, right? But now you can buy the DVDs and watch at home or whatever. But it's easier to make toys off a long running TV series, right? But I think what's happening now is a lot of toys are coming out off the back of video games.
Mm.
I think that's a big.
There's loads of fucking
now.
Halo toys and stuff.
That
like
culture.
That. Gears of War. I see some Gears of War.
It fits in perfectly with collecting and shit like that. Yeah. So video games, I think, are huge toy sellers
and a sustained, long-running franchise with iconic characters.
All right, so what would be the least appropriate toys to release based off a video game? I'm thinking Amnesia would be a pretty bad range of toys.
A toy range for the video game The Suicide of Rachel Foster, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Just off the top of my head. Off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, these are not like... I guess if it's not child-friendly, it doesn't tend to go super mainstream, does it? You know, you've got like Mario
and
Zelda
to toys.
And Halo.
There's loads of Fortnite toys. You've seen those in the toy
stores? Loads of kids play Fortnite. Like
Five Nights at Freddy's, which isn't even really for kids.
At
like,
all.
Right?
Isn't at all for kids.
And they're super popular with kids.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I have no
that's
idea
crazy,
why either.
That's crazy, actually. That is a real one that's really had a breakthrough, hasn't it? Five Nights at Freddy's. That is super
still
weird
never played
that
it.
To so many kids.
There's Resident Evil toys.
Yep.
There's fucking Overwatch toys. There's Lego for Overwatch. Like,
there's
you
Dota
know, even
toys,
WoW.
But they're only for Dota nerds, really, like me.
Well, that's more for collectors. But then Dota...
I guess Assassin's Creed's pretty sort of middle of the road, isn't it? It's teen stuff.
Yeah. Who's drinking that's a Capri, really, son?
It's me.
I mean, just the word assassin, you know, a guy who literally murders people, having kids. You could imagine having kids' toys of him, right?
Yeah, but he looks
cool. And again, how different
cool,
is that
though.
To like a G.I. Joe?
Aesthetically,
you know, what's G.I. Joe doing? He's not fucking, you know, saving cats out of trees, is he? He's murdering people.
No, he's not murdering people.
You can't murder someone if you're in a war.
Nobody
with
dies in G.I. Joe. Their plane explodes and they parachute out. Everybody parachutes to safety in G.I. Joe. That was the running. Sort of like me.
Even if they're on
G.I.
the ground.
Joe.
What if I shot you? You just
you dive out of the exploding
the
tank.
Yeah,
and you might get scuffed up a bit, but nobody ever died in G.I. Joe.
I mean, no one died in A-Team, and that was about a bunch of soldiers fighting mercenaries.
Yeah,
and then nobody died.
It's too violent. Yeah, it's too.
What are they doing? They're like the worst team of mercenaries ever.
Yeah.
that's the whole point. Like, can you imagine being the government agency that employed the A-Team? You'd be like. The A-Team has a 0% kill record.
Well, I think that's a testament to how professional they are.
These numbers are all wrong.
First of all, the Terminator and Terminator 2 didn't kill anybody, and he still got the fucking job done, didn't he? Spoiler alert, apologies.
What do you mean he killed tons
of people. He killed the parents. Terminator, he killed the dog.
In Terminator 2, excuse me, Lewis.
T-1000 killed a bunch of people. I don't think
Terminator was a hero.
Programmed to be good, to protect John Connor.
John Connor said to him,
You were not descriptive over which Terminator you said was killing people.
I said the Terminator.
Terminator 2 is the only one worth actually watching. So I think when somebody says the Terminator, they're talking about Terminator 2.
But when I'm talking about the Terminator, I'm thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Terminator, the Governator.
But he was the good guy in that movie. Did he kill anyone in Terminator 1?
No, but in the first film, he did kill people. And he was going to kill people in 2, but John Connor stopped him and said, what are you doing?
He was going to kill Linda Hamilton in the first one, remember?
Yeah, he tried to kill her. But when they sent a different one back to protect John Connor, he was in an argument with some guys in a car park, and he pulled out a gun and he was going to shoot them.
What the fuck did you do that for?
Yeah.
Because you told me to.
I'm not against people not killing people. I'm all for it. I'm all for people not killing people. I'm down with it. Like, I think that would be great if we could solve every problem without killing. But I just find it quite odd that something so focused. It's like, imagine if Assassin's Creed, in that whole franchise, he never assassinated anyone. It'd be a bit weird, wouldn't it?
He could be a lyrical assassin, maybe. Bust out some limericks or whatever and verbally assassinate people. There's different forms of assassination, Lewis. You should know by now.
Right. Character assassination. Yep. Yeah. Oh my
character
God.
Assassination's another one, yeah.
Character Assassin's Creed. That would be very different.
He just gets up on stage and does a two-hour roast.
Oh, fuck.
Fuck.
He posts nasty things on Twitter and gets sued for defamation.
Yeah.
So coronavirus, huh?
Oh, man.
Well, let's not go back to coronavirus.
Please,
we don't know what's going on. It could be...
The big news now is that there's a lot of cases in Italy. There's like 500 cases in Italy. And
Mamma mia. I hope
they're
okay.
Countries are warning their citizens not to travel to Italy because...
The thing is, you may as well tell them not travel, I think, because I'm by the time this comes out, I'll be there. I'm in Kiev next week. So I'm going via Munich Airport. I'm going to Kiev.
What are you going there for?
A Dota event.
All right.
Right? So
me and Sips go to GDC next week. Yeah.
Oh, next week.
We're traveling, right?
Fuck.
We're all three of us are traveling. And it doesn't really matter if it's in Italy, because if it's in Italy and it's everywhere. Like I think if you really want to stop it, everybody stays home. For 2 weeks, you shut down everything.
Riddle me this. The city of San Francisco has declared a state of emergency, and there's zero confirmed cases of the coronavirus in San Francisco. How's that
work?
Well, they're panicky in Frisco. You know, it doesn't take much to panic the people of San Francisco, I guess.
There's got to be a reason for doing it. I'm just trying to understand what
we've run out
is.
Of hummus.
We're out of rice-a-roni. It's
a state of emergency.
Rice-a-roni.
There's no avocados.
The San Francisco treat. Who remembers that advert? Oldies? Any oldies? Any boomers? No?
Okay. What are you fucking doing?
There'll be some listener out there that knows what I'm talking about.
Somebody somewhere might know.
And they'll recognize that jingle, too.
Laugh it up.
I entertain myself. I entertain myself.
On your own.
What have you guys played any video games recently? I'm in a rut. I haven't been able to find anything that I want to play. But I stopped playing Overwatch, which is a good
That's
first
a good
step.
Thing.
Yeah.
There are three games that I'm into at the moment. Obviously Dota, I'm going to exclude because that's been a permanent fixture in my life for 8 years. So wow. I'm going to say Dota's always been there, right? I'm not going to list that as one of my hot games for now because I still play it pretty much every day.
Right.
Squad.
Squad
just had a big update, three big updates since I last played it. It's amazing. It's very, very cool. It's very difficult,
right?
But it feels very cool to be flying in helicopters. You can call in artillery strikes. It's very cool. Hell Let Loose, I still want to play that. There's a new map for that. I want to play that. Tarkov. I've been playing Tarkov and it is very fun. It's very tense, very nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
People were asking me in chat, do you think Sips was like this? I was like, I think Sips would fucking hate this.
I played it last night. I got it. I played it last night. I like it. I like the idea of it. It's tense, but it's so... I wish you just had a compass on the HUD so that you could call out where stuff is instead of having to be super descriptive. It's behind the blue container to the right of where you are, not where I am. Like, it just takes...
Yes.
It's a clusterfuck of... playing with a team is impossible. Like,
it's very difficult.
I feel like maybe playing solo would be a little bit easier.
Well, I mean, in some ways. What I've found is certain maps lend themselves to pure fighting. You don't really need to worry about anything else. I get lost on the maps an awful lot. Some of them are very big. And once you know them, I think that's half the game, maybe more than half the game. A bit like Counter-Strike. If you play CSGO, if you don't know the maps, you're basically useless. And I think Tarkov is a lot like that. It is, there's something very satisfying about killing people and taking their stuff.
Yes.
And I love that in a game when you're like, I didn't just kill you. You're out of this run. That's it. There's no respawn for you. And everything you had on you, apart from the stuff in your little special case, I'm taking that.
Yeah. It's like doubling down in poker.
It is.
It?
But, yeah. But I then need to escape.
But that special case isn't big enough to fit like really good stuff, though.
But you can put the really valuable stuff. The really valuable stuff, like special keys and things like that, you can put in the case.
Yeah, some of those keys are worth like hundreds of thousands of rubles and stuff, eh?
Like, yeah. But I was watching like Sacriel stream it. He has like 200 million rubles or something crazy like that. Dude's been playing it since release, just crazy rich, going in all mega geared up,
man.
Now my satisfaction does not come from thinking one day I'll be that geared. My satisfaction comes from thinking I'm gonna kill that guy with the shittiest gun I can find. That is what I get out of the game.
I just want to survive one round. I played three games last night and I did okay, like surviving and stuff. And then right at the end, just like everybody's like, okay, go to the extraction thing. Where are you guys? I've lost you. I'm dead. Like somebody fucking shot me on a train track.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Like you get people camping the exits, which is the lowest of the low. I mean, they literally lie in a corner waiting for you to try and exit the map and then they shoot you and take your stuff. And people will run to the exit to camp the exit. Like the match will start and they will just run to the exit to camp it. That's it. And I'm thinking, what a desperate piece of shit you are. Fuck you.
it's such a neat idea for a game, though. I really like it. And it is tense. It's like it's like playing Rust without having to worry about gathering resources and setting up a base and stuff like that, right? It's just the PvP, but it's simulated very well, isn't it? Like the damage,
I think the combat's
guns,
really good and everything, combats, the healing. Yeah. But it's like reloading your gun takes a while, you know? It's like all these little decisions you have to make. And the medical stuff, you don't just go bandage done.
Well, and
you've got to do these fucking battlefield operations. My dude's extracting the bullet and stitching himself up. It's like, it's crazy.
Even just like loading up magazines, like keeping track of how many bullets you have and stuff. Like you could find yourself in a situation where you're like, fuck, I have no ammo. I'm almost dead. I really need to extract. Like it is really well done. It's a really neat idea. I can see why it's so popular too, because I think it's
fun to stream, but it's also
a nice change
boxes.
From Battle Royale too.
Yeah,
because it still feels like Battle Royale, but it's not.
It's like the next evolution, right? It's like the next one. It's not Fortnite and it's not Apex. It's
well,
just
instead
the next
of having a circle that sort of shrinks around you, you're limited by time. You have half an hour, so like you have to extract within half an hour. So you have a limited time to run around on the map, kill people, take stuff, loot stuff, gain XP, whatever, you know what I mean? So it's like it's not like this thing that you can just spend a lot of time meticulously doing, you know? It's just it's something you have to sort of think about and plan. Kind of, you know, it's kind of like with BRs, you sort of have to react to this circle closing, but you know, with this you have to sort of be mindful of the timer and
but
stuff
then the
too.
additional adjustment, which I think is so clever, is that there are also AI units on the map.
Yes.
But players can also be controlling the AI units. So you can do a run where you spawn in as a scav and you have random gear and you can exit the map and you can keep whatever you exit the map with just like regular, but you don't have a special container. So you either get out or that's it. And you have to try and kill the other players and take their stuff.
Yeah.
Which makes it really interesting because that means otherwise you think, oh, it's just a scav. We can just kill it. But that scab could be a dude and he could be really good.
You have a hideout that you can upgrade.
You can upgrade the hideout and everything.
Yeah, you can find parts for your hideout out on, you know, in these missions, bring them back and upgrade your hideout, which give you like passive bonuses and stuff.
I will say this. I've streamed it a bit. It is the most backseated game I think I've ever played.
Yeah.
Everything I'm doing is wrong. No, don't put your screws there. You need the bolts and the screws. Don't sell that. Oh my God, what are you doing? It's like constant.
Yeah.
And, oh, don't put that ammo in that gun. You need the PP1748B rounds, not the C rounds, you noob. You're like, all right, come on.
Oh,
and
man.
I've been playing for like 10 hours.
Like, there's six vendors and they all sell this random assortment of magazines, ammo, weapons and stuff. It's like I bought a gun yesterday and it took me like an hour to find the vendor that actually sells the magazine for this thing.
Oh my God.
And then load the bullets into it.
I'm gonna have to check this out. Here's my thing. which I've played, which I recommend you play, Sips. The new DLC for RimWorld came out.
Oh, yeah, I know. People keep getting me to... I'm not in the mood to play RimWorld. You have to be in the mood, right?
It's called RimWorld Royalty. Preach it, brother.
It's 15 quid. It's got this amazing system where there's like this sort of imperial kingdom. And yeah, you can, they sort of, they can give you quests.
I was questioning this the other day as paid DLC. And like a lot of people pointed out, I was playing Farmer's Dynasty at the time, which I paid like $20 for. And like, you know, so they were saying like, how could you question that when you paid money for like this crappy game or whatever? And that's a fair point. But with RimWorld and the amount of mods that are out, it feels like, hasn't somebody already modded that? Like, or did they just take a really good mod and then charge for it?
How long have you spent on RimWorld to get your, you know, $10 worth or whatever?
Absolutely, I've gotten it. I don't mind supporting them further. It's an amazing game.
I think you could afford a DLC, which has a shitload of stuff anyway.
But I'm not criticizing. I'm just curious as to how they found something that wasn't modded, or you know what I mean? Like, I will definitely get it.
This is my question too.
I don't mind supporting them, but it seems crazy that a mod doesn't already exist for that, or did they just take it and polish it up?
That they're made by random people who are usually shit. They're not updated. They're not stable. They're not very good. They're not very in depth. They're not balanced. They're not fun. You know, and they don't usually work very well.
I don't
know.
Like, some RimWorld mods are really good, though.
But I think the thing is, the mods can only, they can change a little bit, but they can't change the underlying code. So whatever happens with a mod, it's still basically building on the base game. So any DLC that the actual devs release, they can change the game to fit that. So it's like version 1.1 of RimWorld, right? So there've been obviously some changes under the hood that a mod wouldn't be able to do. I think that's the essence of it.
I got a weed mod for RimWorld that had like all this broken ass stuff in it, but it was well done. It was cool. You could grow weed and like harvest the weed and stuff, but then you could make like weed armor and stuff that sold for a lot of money, which was in itself kind of broken. And I think another thing you have to be careful of when you get a mod in RimWorld is, depending on what it sort of contributes back to your colony, if it all of a sudden just raises the worth of your colony tenfold, you're going to get raided by something that you just can't defend against. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like,
might have been something that was really easy to set up that made you a lot of money, but then you don't have the gear that you need to fight off a raid of like 20 fucking, you know, robo maggots or whatever they are.
Oh man.
So anyway, this DLC, it's added like these sort of quests that you could do to raise yourself in the king's eyes. And so one of the quests that I saw Ben doing was that the king had made him look after his royal stag. Okay. And so you had to look after the stag and feed it and stuff, but the king sent some bodyguards with the stag, which were like four power armored badasses with sort of these new weapons and gear and stuff. And then obviously someone wants to capture and kidnap the king's stag. So they send these waves of mechs at you. And, you know, you're trying to like heal up the power guys and keep them fed and build them rooms and stuff and keep them happy. And then eventually, you know, you hold off all of these mechs and then you sort of get raised up to a duke and you get some special powers. And the king asks you to build something for him, or, you know, it's cool and it's fun and it's different. And it gives you this alternate win condition as well. Rather than launching the rocket, the idea is to like ascend to be a king of your own area. It's good stuff. And I recommend you give it a go and not be put off by the idea that, I think RimWorld did add modding support, and you know, it is a game with mods that's had allow it. I think that shouldn't hold that against it.
No.
If it didn't have any mods.
I was just surprised that DLC came out so long after the game has been released and there wasn't already like a mod in existence that kind of did that. And maybe there is, but at the same time, I don't begrudge paying more money for a game that I've gotten, you know, 10 times the value out of it.
I mean, honestly, it's like a one-man team as well, right?
It's true.
Like,
I think he's got a few people with
him.
Tynan
Sylvester, is that his name?
Yeah, he probably has a couple
dude's
of people
amazing.
Now. Yeah, it's a great game.
But it's really good, so I recommend you give it a go.
I played that Stone Shard for a bit yesterday, which I overall liked. I liked the look of it.
It's hard as balls.
Yeah, it's hard, but it feels bullshit hard and not like... It doesn't feel hard in a clever way. It
Battle Brothers.
I died because I was fighting a room with like three people that I killed, and then I was resting, and I was really low on health after that fight, and some dude just came in from like four rooms away and attacked me. And it's just like, okay, you know, like that doesn't feel fair or good. It's just a stupid mechanic.
Some of these games are games for masochists.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people that dive into games like that, like you have to grind. Like Battle Brothers is a prime example of a game I really want to love. But if I lose one more guy to a random headshot from some unarmored archer with a bow and arrow, and this guy's, it's like 20 missions I've had to do to get this guy leveled up and get geared up, bam, dead. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, my archer just died, and it's going to take me hours and hours and hours to replace him. I can't even afford to replace him, and he just dies?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing I can do? There's nothing you can do. I mean, it's just like, I honestly think there are a lot of games out there where the devs are appealing to us a niche crowd who like that.
Of psychopaths.
Yes, yeah. They enjoy the suffering and pain of randomly losing
a guy.
There's
a lot to like in Stone Shard, though. I don't want like people to think that I hate it just because of that, but that it was like, enough to get me to stop playing it. I just thought, I'm not wasting my time on a game that's just going to do this. Like, it's not.
No, you're right. And there's no reason to if that's not. If you didn't fight, if you didn't die and think, that was, okay, I learned from that, I'm going to do it again, yeah. I'm excited to carry on, I will try again. Like, unless you're excited to do that, and sometimes games do that. Like, there's this growing frustration where people code incredibly hard games, and then everyone loves them. And if you say anything bad about them, and you say, oh, I don't like this game.
Just get good.
They go, well, get good, fucking noob. Yeah. Why do you suck so hard?
Yeah.
Why are you criticizing the game for being hard? It's like, well, sometimes it feels like if you're a game dev, you could just make a really hard game and people will review it overwhelmingly positive just because, oh, it wasn't for me. I wasn't very good at it. I died straight away. I only played it for half an hour. I didn't really like it, but I give it a positive. Yay. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, people are scared to do that.
People don't want to stick their necks up and say, this game was too hard for me, because it's like admitting failure. I also think with a lot of those games, what you end up with, if it's that brutally hard, people are going to min-max it, and it turns out, oh, this is the only build that's actually any good.
Yeah. So
you know what I mean?
It can boil down to that.
Don't do that. This literally boils down to, this is the only thing that actually really gives you a decent chance.
Yeah.
And I like games that give you a bunch of different ways to win. It annoys me when a game doesn't have that.
I don't mind a game throwing curveballs at you once in a while too. Like, you know, if you eat some berries that you found because you're hungry and you get poisoned, but there's some reasonable way to get around that where it's not just like you're dead now, you know. It's like going back to Sierra Adventure games, you know, like you shouldn't have pressed the one key randomly, you're dead, I hope you saved, you know. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Do you know the first game I can remember being like that? I think it was called Dragon's Lair, and it was an arcade game, and it was very expensive because it used, instead of just graphics, it was almost like watching a cartoon.
Yeah, it had the cartoons, right? They were in arcades.
Yeah, I think it was Ralph Bakshi.
Dragon's Lair, yeah.
Was the artist, I think. But it was really fucking impossibly hard. Like, impossibly hard. The game gave you no feedback. There was no idea of what you had to do. You just had to learn by playing it. And there were trading cards that came out to go with Dragon's Lair. I remember having them. I remember I'd play the game, I'd put my money in, I would die almost straight away. Because there was no internet guide to look up. You had to buy a magazine that said, this is what you do in these rooms.
Yeah.
And the trading cards that you could buy would give you hints about what to do on each room. And it would be like, when the dragon moves to this side, push right. If you push any other direction, game over. You're dead. It's like that throughout the game.
Yeah.
It's unfucking believable that it was a thing.
And it's just stupid. Because it doesn't... I feel like there's clever ways of making something difficult, like where you either need like skills, like you need to practice to get better at it or whatever. But there's some really just bullshitty things that happen where people are just like, oh, it's really hard. But it's like, no, it's not hard. It's just badly designed. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, there's a way better way of doing this.
Yeah. Like, Dota is hard. And the better you get at it, the harder it gets. But there is always a way to win.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. And yes, there are some games you just think, oh my God. But it's like you got outdrafted or you made a fundamental mistake.
Yeah, there's metagame components and stuff too. Yeah.
But a game that just says, oh yeah, sorry, yeah, you ate the wrong berry, like you said.
Yeah.
You're like, but there was no, like, I don't like a game where the only way to learn what not to do is by dying to it. Like, there should be some hint that this is a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
Like, most games, if, let's say, you know, those puzzles where I think Mario, that's why Mario did this really well, is you generally know, okay, something's about to happen. Like, if there's a platform that's going to collapse, it wobbles a bit and you think, oh shit, this is going to collapse, and you jump off it.
The thing is, like, in a game like that, in a platformer like Mario, the average time it takes to complete a level is like a minute or 2 minutes or whatever. There's even a timer on the top of the screen, right?
Right.
So if you miss a platform and die, okay, cool, I'll retry it. It's not, you know, but like in a game like Stone Shard, where you can only save the game by sleeping at an inn or whatever.
Right.
It might have taken you 2 hours to get to the depths of this fort that you're fighting your way through. Just to get sort of, you know, dunked on by some dude that probably shouldn't have heard you. I know it's like early access. Maybe they'll change it. I don't know.
No.
But it's just like, and then you die and then you have to restart. But it's not like there's no satisfaction to it whatsoever. You just have to redo 2 hours of the same shit to get back to that point.
I mean, the thing is, by putting that in, what you're doing is saying, we don't want save scumming. Like, we want that kind of rogue experience. But it's like, but that's like, if you don't want to save scum, just do an Iron Man run. Just let people do an Iron Man run. Let me save scum, because I can't get anything out of the game if I can't save scum.
Yeah.
Because I'll just go, fuck this, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to spend another 2 hours doing the same fucking level.
Yeah. I think that's why games like XCOM and maybe Battle Brothers works, because it's not just you and one character. It's the overarching game is you're managing a squad, a roster with like a backbench and stuff like that. So in XCOM, doing an Iron Man run, it's a little bit different because you might lose your best guy, but then it makes things interesting, or it can.
Yeah, and it's part of the story, I find.
Yeah,
like when I've done
like,
an XCOM run.
We lost Reggie.
Like, no,
shit.
He'd done 50 missions. Oh,
but
my
then
God.
Somebody else has a chance to shine, and it's interesting, and it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like in a game where you control one character, like I guess, like, I'm not a big Dark Souls fan either. And I guess there's, you know, a lot of people love these like really difficult games where you have to like learn patterns and these big boss fights.
It might happen
and stuff.
To you.
No.
It might happen to you. You'll play a specific game and it will get you into that genre, and suddenly you'll be like, oh, maybe I could do Dark Souls.
No.
Maybe.
You know, and then
you'll
try it and maybe you'll like
I've
it.
I've watched Harry play.
Because there's kind of the gateways to it.
I've
like
watched people
Star
play
Wars
it that are good at it.
Fallen
and they die
or
to a chest.
It's like a light one, and Remnant from the Ashes is really light Dark Souls feel. Good stuff. They're good fun.
Not
I haven't, like, any of those games that I've played, I haven't really enjoyed. Like,
Lewis,
just...
I have a heart condition and I have I have anxiety. There's no way I'm playing a game where I die and that's the end of the game. No way. Too much for me. Too
Do you know what
much.
Should be playing with? Barbies.
Yeah,
Pokemon
you should.
Cards,
you should get a Malibu Barbie flag.
I would love
that's
to.
What you should be doing.
I would love to.
You know,
get some G.I. Joes. Man, I wish I didn't sell. I sold all my G.I. Joes at a garage sale when I was in my teens. I needed money for smokes.
My sister broke the heads off all my Action Men.
Right.
She pulled the heads off all of them. I couldn't believe it. I went to university, I came back, and I was like, I wonder if they're going to be worth anything one day. I went to look at them. All the heads have been pulled off.
I mean,
and she did this because I had set up a sniper overlook from my bunk bed, sniping down into the Barbie dream house, right? Which is a perfectly acceptable thing
course,
to do when
yeah.
you're like 13 years of age. She
recon,
remembered
yeah.
that. As soon as I left the house, I'm off to university. She's like, fuck this nerd. I'm going to snap the heads off all his Action Men. What the fuck? Kind of vindictive bitch is my sister. She's chill now.
Well,
we're cool now.
She's dead now.
No.
I killed her.
No.
I sent the A-team to kill her. But they worked it out because they haven't killed her.
If you'd had your whole collection of Action Men or G.I. Joes or whatever preserved throughout those years, and you find yourself like in your 40s and like being nostalgic and looking back, you could have been that guy that just has a room in his house devoted to like your shrine to, you know, childhood toys or whatever.
No.
I'm glad that I sold all my toys. And
yeah,
now
I don't
have that attachment to stuff like as an adult, you know, like material things I'm not overly attached to. And I think that's because as a kid, I sold all my toys at a garage sale. So, you know what I mean?
I bought some cigarettes and some beer and some weed.
Oh,
it was
man.
Way cooler. I've got a lot of stuff from when I was younger still here, like comics and role-playing stuff.
You should give it to your daughter to like bargain up in the playground.
No,
yeah,
I want to train her for Pokemon
cards. Get a really good deal.
But to me, this is like she loves looking through this stuff. And I like the fact that I've kept it because I know she's going to be into this stuff when she's older. So I've kept it, honestly, because I know that one day she will get value
sure,
from it.
Dad.
Also, I'm still desperate to play the original Car Wars with someone at some point. I reckon Ben
Car Wars?
Yeah, Car Wars, mate.
Car Wars.
One of the best
Wars
board games of all times.
We're playing.
And Starfleet Battles. Any Starfleet Battles fans out there? Yeah, there will be. There will be. Couple
right.
of nerds. Couple of
Dude,
nerds. Bless you.
I'll come. Wait, bring it down with you. We'll play it here it's, when you come down.
The rule book for Starfleet Battles is like a tax manual. It is insane.
Oh, don't worry. We got Ben, though.
So all right, but it's literally, I'm not
he
kidding.
He probably knows it already.
You'll be in the middle of doing it. I'm going to say, actually, Lewis, according to rule 14B.6.01, clause 3, you cannot launch a Wild Weasel shuttle on your turn after you've done your energy allocation, but before you've done life support or something. It'll be like that.
Yeah,
you'll
but
be like, of course.
Ben will say, oh, unless you're using like the tachyon card, in which case you can do it.
There's
no
tachyon
card.
Like,
Ben will know. No, but no. Ben will know. Like,
Ben
he'll
doesn't
be like,
know Starfleet
yeah, I played Starfleet Battles for 6 years
Ben
at the club
doesn't
with,
know Starfleet
with old
Battles.
Tony.
I guarantee you he doesn't know Starfleet Battles.
£5 says he does.
A tenner says he does not.
£20 says he does.
Wait, when we say no, are you saying he's heard of it? Or are you saying he knows the rules?
He knows the rules.
£20, done. I'll have £20 off you, sir.
Well, we'll
I guarantee you Ben does not know the rules for Starfleet Battles.
You
because
do not
nobody
know
does.
What Ben knows. He knows a
no,
lot of
you
shit.
You do not know what Ben
he
knows.
He spent years in those. We played Modern Warfare for 10 years. He played fucking Battletech and Starfleet Battles.
He played Starfleet Battles.
No, I guarantee you he didn't play Starfleet Battles. Is he in the office? Is he in the office now?
Yeah.
While you
go
were,
ask him
while
now.
You were busy prancing around collecting mounts and raising your reputation with the Bronze Dragonflight, you know what Ben was doing? That's right. He was playing Starfleet Battles the
no
whole
fucking, way.
Fucking time.
No way.
He learned all the rules. He learned all the moves. This guy has got the moves. He's got the razzle-dazzle. He can bust it out anytime he wants.
I guarantee you he doesn't.
No, he probably doesn't. You're
because
right.
I know Ben, and he likes fun games. And it
it's
is not
at his
a
desk. I'll have to ask him when he's back.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
Anyway, that's enough time for today.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for watching, listening, everyone.
Thanks.
We'll be back next week. Oh, no, we won't. Where are you going away? Are you going to be away on Thursday?
I will not be here on Thursday. I'll be in Kiev.
Flax is going to Tarkov next week. So
we're going to have a couple of weeks of Triforce break.
Yeah, because we're away the week after that, too.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that's come along really quick. And then TwitchCon is just around the corner too. Holy jeez.
I'll do a solo podcast to fill the
please
time.
Please do.
Monoforce.
In your dressing gown on your channel.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I'll do a solo podcast. Or how about this?
What?
How about the week you guys are away, I do like a special Triforce where I talk to other people.
No.
And record those conversations and we put it on.
No.
As like a Triforce on the road interview special. I'll talk to a random assortment of people I know.
Sure.
No, nah, I won't. But I won't get around to
no.
it.
No.
I can't be bothered.
All right.
The more I think
bye.
About it, the less I want. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.